You're listening to The David Knight Show. Using free speech to free minds. It's The David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, October 31st, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today, we have the Democrats are going to be treating themselves as they trick everyone else. They are going to be holding a vote, and I talked about yesterday what the new rules are. As I tweeted out yesterday, I said, surprise, surprise, they never had any rules. And so now they're going to make some rules. And when the House makes the rules, the House always wins. And so we have some updates about this process and some things that have come out, how they've already been refusing to allow Republicans to question people, to bring witnesses and so forth. And that was one of the key things in the rules. President Trump is going to be barred and his lawyers will be barred. I should say he's not going to be there cross-examining people, of course, but people representing him will be barred from participating in this until it's all finished. Meanwhile, the Republicans who are on the committee will not be allowed to subpoena people without Adam Schiff's permission. They got to ask him in writing, please, may I? And he can, for any reason, say no. They can't subpoena people. They can't call witnesses who will come voluntarily without that either. So it gives you an idea of where this is headed. But we're also going to take a look at some suspicious deaths. We had some more information about Jeffrey Epstein. Not really new information. We just had a doctor who is very famous in terms of forensic pathology. And he was hired by some people related to Epstein, I believe. And his brother, that's right, his brother looked at the autopsy, and there's new pictures of the infamous hyoid bone, which I'd never heard of before, but I'm not a forensic pathologist, and neither are you. But what we told you at the time was that it looked like that was not a strangling. And so there's more information about why that looks like it's not a strangling. But, you know, we don't have any pictures of the body itself that are coming out. Or of the ear, more specifically. We did get an alleged picture of Jeffrey Epstein where the ear did not look the same. And as we're all starting to become experts on biometric surveillance and the many ways that the government can identify you everywhere that they want, there's things like the ear that are as definite as a fingerprint. And so as they cast aspersions on whether or not this was a murder rather than a suicide. Maybe we also ought to start looking at whether or not this was a ringer that was put in there. But it's no surprise, quite frankly. And we're going to also take a look in a little bit more depth at the suspicious death of Baghdadi. And they're not going to go into too much detail about this. I just talked about this the last several days. But what President Trump has done is he's had a lot of fun with this dog, with this wag the dog narrative. And he is wagging the dog even more with a Photoshop picture that he put out talking about, you know, basically showing him putting on a medal on the dog. And that really got Jim Acosta. And I'm sure the people at Snopes are just, you know, all upset with their cats on the couch all over this. Oh, that's not real. That's not real. Well, of course, it wasn't real. President Trump said he will have the hero dog coming soon. So we will. That's the Photoshopped picture that got Jim Acosta and presumably Snopes and all these other fact checkers so upset, who have no sense of humor. So we're going to take a look at this as the perfect psyop. NPR, by the way, weighed in, not to be outdone by the Washington Post. They came in with their own assessment of Baghdadi. I'll give that to you as well. I got a lot of news also about California's warming. Yeah, warming California style. Make sure that this is how you put out your electric car. when it's on fire. We'll have those instructions coming up. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's October 31st, year of our Lord 2019. I'm David Knight, your host, and we will look at what the Democrats are doing for Halloween. They're dressing up as if they're serious legislators, and they're going to be working on tricking the public and handing out treats to themselves and to the Marxists among them, AOC. We should call her, I think, not just occasional cortex. I've been calling her Alexandria occasional cortex, but I think we ought to call her authoritarian occasional cortex, just so people understand her Marxist bent. But before we get into that, I want to take a look at some suspicious deaths. And then we're also going to take a look at how Twitter is now going to be banning political advertising. Isn't that interesting? Whoa. These people who said that they were going to be the free speech wing of the free speech party. That's what Jack said. He also said many times in hearings that it was the digital public square. And so this guy who owns the digital public square has now decreed that there will be no free speech in it. You see, free speech doesn't apply to the kind of perverted stuff that typically would get banned by communities in the past. And Hollywood would say, well, wait, we have free speech to do that. You know, we can. And if you don't like our hateful trolling of Christians with, you know, putting a crucifix in a vat of urine and getting government funding for it, if you don't like that, well, you're opposed to free speech. No, free speech fundamentally was about protecting the most contentious things that people talk about. And what is that? Well, that's religion and politics. You talk about religion and politics, everybody gets their feelings hurt, right? And so, and they want to ban it. This isn't anything new. The founders of this country knew what the nature, what human nature was. They knew the nature of government, and they knew the nature of rulers, and they knew that they always wanted to shut down any speech that wasn't what they liked. And that's why it was specifically protected. But of course, the rules don't apply on Twitter because we have Jack making the rules, just like the House is going to make the rules on impeachment. They didn't have any rules, so now they're going to make rules. You know, there weren't any clear-cut rules with social media and with YouTube and Google before they purged us. Now, they did have some rules, but they didn't pay any attention to them. There wasn't a three-strike process. There wasn't any warning about that. No, nothing. Nothing at all. Oh, we'll just take you off. And now we got some new rules. And, yeah, those don't really apply to that either, but it doesn't matter because if you're the ruler, you don't have to pay attention to rules. See, Jack Dorsey has reserved the right to remove President Trump off of Twitter altogether. But a judge has told President Trump that he can't on his own personal account, he can't block people who are trolls. President Trump, you don't have to pay attention to these judges when they make rulings like that. They have no authority to tell you stuff like that. And this is, so we'll contrast this to what Facebook is doing in their approach, or at least what they're saying they're doing. These people always say one thing and do another. But let's take a look at some suspicious deaths. We had Fox News come out, and now you can believe it. I mean, we told you months and months ago that this was not a strangulation. Whatever it was, whether this guy that they say was Jeffrey Epstein, whether or not it was Jeffrey Epstein, whoever that was, did not hang himself by tying a sheet to his neck and kneeling on the floor. You know, that's the narrative. And actually, let's play what Dr. Michael Baden, former New York City medical examiner, who's worked on a lot of high-profile cases in his career. He's 85 years old. He was hired by Epstein's brother, and he went on Fox News. And so now you can believe it, because Fox News is saying it. So let's hear what Michael Baden says so you can believe him.
At the autopsy on day one, there were findings that were unusual for suicidal hanging and more consistent with ligature homicidal strangulation, which included...
And it was suggested at the time that he committed suicide by doing what?
By hanging. At the time, he was found allegedly hanging by homemade ligature of sheets.
Are you saying you don't think it was suicide?
I think that the evidence points toward homicide rather than suicide.
Why?
Because there are multiple 3 fractures in the hyoid bone, the thyroid cartilage, that are very unusual for suicide and more indicative of strangulation, homicidal strangulation.
Let's take a look at what the medical examiner stated. After a careful review of all the investigative information, including complete autopsy findings, the determination on the death of Epstein is below. Cause, hanging, manner, suicide. You say that his fatal injuries are consistent with homicide?
More consistent with homicide. And in fact, at the time of the autopsy, the doctor doing the autopsy didn't think it was enough information to say suicide, so she put it pending further study. And then for some reason, and they want to know, the family wants to know, why was it changed from pending further study to homicide afterwards?
So if you're there watching them perform this autopsy, you notice these 3 broken bones, and you believe it would be homicide. So that would mean another person would have gone into his cell, strangled him. Did he have any signs of trying to fight back?
Well, they took a fingernail clippings to see if there's anybody else's DNA on it, and that hasn't been released. Neither has the information about whose DNA is on the ligature. A ligature was made out of torn strips of orange sheets, and whoever made it had to have a lot of DNA on it. And the brother's been asking that from day one.
So. Maybe you ought to do a DNA test on the murder victim just to make sure it's Jeffrey Epstein. I don't know. I mean, you know, they took some samples, but they haven't released that. And so now we have the pictures, not the pictures of the murder victim, the alleged Jeffrey Epstein, but we have pictures of the bones that were broken. And as you heard, he was saying that he had 3 broken bones, 2 fractures on the left and right side of his larynx. Specifically the thyroid cartilage of his Adam's apple, as well as the left hyoid bone, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And so he said, these are very unusual in a suicidal hanging, much more common in a homicidal strangulation. He said, the 3 fractures are very rare. I've not seen in 50 years where that has occurred in a suicidal hanging. Now, we told you that months ago, but now you can believe it because you've seen it on Fox and Friends. and yet, what they did not talk about, as far as I know, I didn't watch the whole clip, whole segment that they had. But they didn't talk about the missing guards. You know, I had John Kiriakou, who spent time in that very prison. And he said, well, let me tell you what the procedure is for suicide watch. You know, I was actually paid as a prisoner to set watch over people who had attempted suicide in the past. And so, you know, we talked about how you have suicide watch. We had him on here. Talked about that. There's the missing guards, a couple of hours. Nobody was there at all. All the missing video. They said, are there any signs that something could happen? Well, no, we don't have any signs and we don't have any videos either. That in and of itself is something of a sign, isn't it? To discerning people. Question everything the government has to say to you, especially when it doesn't make any sense. All the video is missing, not just the hallway video, but the video inside the cell, nothing anywhere. And as he pointed out, and as we had pointed out, if you're going to commit suicide, it's very unlikely that you would be able to do that by tying a sheet around your neck and getting on your knees and tying the other end to the bed and just leaning forward to do that, right? And as he pointed out, if a person weighed 120 pounds and their head was 10 pounds, that'd be 110 pounds of pressure on the neck at the jaw during a hanging. But if somebody put a hand around somebody's neck and squeezed, that could double or even triple the pressure on the neck. That's how that bone gets broken, the hyoid bone. That's an indication that it's strangulation. Oh, where is Sherlock when we need him? Actually, don't need him. It's so incredibly crazy. We're going to be talking a little bit more about about Baghdadi as well, and about the OPCW report and what whistleblowers have said about the fake Syria attacks as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. So we told you about the Syrian raid, and we're tell you again that whistleblowers have now come out and said we were right. It was a lie. And we told you about the Jeffrey Epstein situation, and now, you know, they're admitting, yeah, it doesn't look like he, whoever this was. Of course, they're still assuming that it's Jeffrey Epstein. I wouldn't even assume that, quite frankly. He's got a lot of friends in high places. He also had some enemies, too. So the question is, did they feel like it was better to kill him? You know, dead men tell no tells. And, of course, dog heroes don't tell any tales either. They do wag them, however. So we'll be taking a look at that next. The suspicious death of Baghdadi. And I'm, you know, one of the few people that think that it's suspicious, but I'm not the only one. I do think it is a masterstroke psyop by President Trump against the deep state. I'll just give that to him right there. Baghdadi, what do we know about the U.S. raid in Syria? Writes the BBC. Now we've got new aerial photos of what happened. And kind of like what we saw with the Epstein autopsy photos. You know, you first saw the headline, oh, Epstein autopsy photos. Look at pictures of the body or something. No, no. They've got pictures of a neck bone, a wishbone, essentially. I guess you could call it the Clinton's wishbone. But it's a wishbone, essentially, the neck bone that's there, pictures of it. And we've kind of got that same kind of picture of what happened with the raid. We have aerial photos of a building, and you see some troops moving in. And then you've got aerial photos of that building being blown up. First at a distance, and then up close, you see a missile coming in and hitting it and blowing up half of that building. Which, if that was the building that he was in, and he'd already exploded himself inside the building, but maybe it was really, really deep in there where the dog was, you know, and the other guy. I don't know. But that's proof positive. We have grainy pictures of a building somewhere and a building being blown up. And so that's it. You know, like we got with the Epstein thing. But the BBC is all over it. What we know about the U.S. raid, and they're selling it. They're selling it. Baghdadi's death fuels a surge in pro-ISIS social media posts. I want you to hold that headline in your mind here for a second and think about this. We have Twitter and all these other social media places where Alex Jones has been banned. I'm still on Twitter, but I'm essentially in jail on Twitter. I mean, you know, I do tweet out videos there occasionally, but for the most part, you know, it's canned. It's contained. My reach has been, you know, chopped off. They're just waiting for me to leave, I guess. I've been taken off of Facebook. My program's been taken off of Facebook. I've been purged off of YouTube and so forth. But, you know, ISIS is still out there, all over social media. It's a phenomenon. After the announced death of Baghdadi, there's pro-ISIS social media surging. And it's all pro-ISIS. How is it that we're more dangerous than ISIS? It might be because, and I'll give you this when we get into what's going on in Syria, the background on this some more. I'm going to point out again that the same people are trying to censor us because we talk about their endless wars. The same people are trying to censor us because we talked about how they created ISIS, how they armed and trained ISIS, how they were partnering with ISIS, and with the Kurds, who are Marxist-Leninists, just like the Democrats. That's why I guess they're so upset about this. Why? Those people are Marxist-Leninists, and they're kind of like AOC. Why aren't you helping them? They probably could come up with a Green New Deal as well. You know, and they were killing Christians in the area, too. You know, the Democrats looked at that. They aspire to being just like the Kurds. So why isn't President Trump doing more to help these people? They've been his partner, or not his partners, but Obama's partners and Lindsey's partners and John McCain's partners for a long time, the CIA's partners. So, yeah, ISIS is still all over social media. Imagine that. NPR does a Washington Post type of death notice. They call Baghdadi and they say he was a real leader. A movement he led like we've not seen before. There you go. Like I read all of those Washington Post death notices where people were trolling them for calling Baghdadi an austere religious scholar. You know, that religion of peace. And all these people had death notices about Darth Vader, the Wicked Witch of the West, and so forth. And then NPR does their own one. He was a real leader, a movement like we've never seen before. He led a movement like we've never seen before. ISIS had tens of thousands of members, fighters who were coming in from all over the world. This isn't the end of ISIS, but he was a real leader. And then they finally admitted that it was definitely a major blow to the Islamic State, which is more than Max Boot and the never-Trumpers, never-leavers. We could call them never-leavers, too, right? That's one of the key things that they hate about President Trump. And one of the key reasons that they took us off was because we talk about the military-industrial complex. We expose their lies and their schemes. And so, you know, these people who never want to leave do want President Trump to leave. These never-Trumpers, Max Boot. One of the key people there. And now a CNN analyst, of course. And he had tweeted out and then deleted it because he got a lot of criticism. The assertion that Baghdadi died as a coward was, in any case, contradicted by the fact that rather than be captured, he blew himself up. And if you follow the official story, also his kids who are with him. But he's not a coward, according to Max Boot. Brave. And Max probably knows him. Or knows some people who know him. Probably the degrees of separation between Max Boot and Baghdadi are far, far fewer than you know. Or I know. Probably just a couple of degrees of separation. He's a friend of a friend. So he's just talking about that poor friend. Zero Hedge had an article where they compared Seymour Hersh, going back and looking at the Obama administration's narrative about when they allegedly took out Osama bin Laden and comparing it to this narrative about Baghdadi, which I have done for several days. But back in 2015, Cy Hersh debunked the Obama administration's narrative of the hit. As he pointed out, the close American ally, Pakistan, had for years been hiding Osama bin Laden in plain sight. Now, you can either conclude that, or you can conclude that it wasn't Osama bin Laden at all in that area. Because it was such a high security area that nobody got into that area unless they showed ID. And as I pointed out the other day, when they showed pictures, afterwards they tried to provide even more details because people weren't buying the story, many of us. And so they showed a picture of a guy, you know, in front of a television set. They show him from the side and then quickly pivot to his back and show what he's, video games or whatever he's playing with. And as one person in the area, everybody in the area said, no, we never saw Osama bin Laden. One guy said, well, that video, that was my neighbor. Joe Mohammed, or whatever his name was. I'm sure it was Mohammed something. We'll have more about this, and we'll talk about the OPCW, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, and how they lied to you about that raid. April of 2018. We'll be right back.
Move me on to any black square. Use me any time you want. Just remember that.
It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Surround yourself with yourself. Move on back to squares.
Welcome back. We're talking about suspicious deaths. We talked about Jeffrey Epstein. More suspicions raised now. Not any new suspicions, frankly, but now being talked about by mainstream media because it is so unbelievable. And as we had 4 years after the alleged Navy SEAL raid in Pakistan, and remember, the hero of that raid last week, McRaven, was writing op-ed pieces McRaven was the guy at the time, the admiral, who was over the Navy SEALs. And he was touted everywhere. Look at this. The guy who got bin Laden, the admiral who led the Navy SEALs who got bin Laden, says President Trump has got to go for the good of the nation. Absolutely got to go. He's just not doing enough for against ISIS and so forth. He's got to go. Lo and behold, we had a raid with remarkable similarities to the raid that got bin Laden, which was, as I believe, as Seymour Hersh believes, a fraud. That's fine. We'll go with that story, President Trump. We'll let the mainstream media want us to run with that. And, of course, they will not push back on this. You notice that no matter how absurd this is, no criticism is going to come from the mainstream media. You'll have people like Cy Hirsch and InfoWars that we'll look at it. But, again, as I said before, you'll never have Fox News question, even when Obama puts out an unbelievable narrative about getting Osama bin Laden, filled with contradictory details and so forth. They're never going to call BS on that, because you've got to make the military industrial complex look good, because they're the ones who run the show. They're the ones who give you the access. They're the ones who can take you down, as they just showed with InfoWars on social media last year. And then 800 more sites 2 months later who oppose the military industrial complex and the police state and the surveillance state and so forth that's running through here. So, yeah, they are not going to question that. You know, that's the one thing that you can do. And so no matter how ridiculous, no matter how much President Trump trolls these people, he's got some great trolls. We'll talk about that with the dog. It's still going. No matter how much he does that, they will never call bullshit on any of this stuff. Sorry about that. BS. Okay. They'll never call it on any of this stuff. They will go along with it because it makes them look good. It makes them look tough. The most that they will do. Oh, I'll show you what they're going to do. But let's first go back to the similarities between this and what Cy Hirsch said 4 years after the alleged raid that killed bin Laden. He pointed out a lot of different problems with it. The first one was that where he was hiding there, the ally of America, Pakistan, had been hiding him in plain sight. Or, as I said, as we were going to break, it wasn't him at all. Either they were cooperating and hiding him and had been hiding him while the U.S. military was going around for years on a wild goose chase in the mountains of Afghanistan. They were hiding him right there, our military allies. That's kind of interesting. And the similarity to this, to that and this latest raid, is the fact that in this area where Baghdadi was hiding, this is right there, Idlib, right there close to the Turkish-Syrian border. Just a few miles from the Turkish border, as a matter of fact. That area that we just left. Because, you know, we were protecting the Kurds and the good guys that were there and so forth. And as they point out in the story on Zero Hedge, how did that area get under the control of these moderate rebels, we're told? Well, actually, it was an al-Qaeda affiliate. They weren't moderate rebels at all. We've said this many times when John McCain was posing in pictures with him. As a matter of fact, a lot of people believe it's difficult to tell from the picture, but you can make a good case that one of the people that he was pictured with was Baghdadi himself. Now, whether or not that's the case, there was an al-Qaeda affiliate, HTS, I'll try to pronounce this, Hayat Tahrir al-Asham, but it's HTS. They held the Idlib province for years. How did they get that? Well, this jihadist coalition took Idlib from Syrian government control in 2015, and they were assisted by U.S. and allied intelligence officers who are working from operation rooms in southern Turkey, just right across the border, just a few miles away. So we have U.S. intelligence operations in our NATO ally, Turkey, and we're helping these al-Qaeda jihadis take that from the Syrians, because the objective was regime change, and we didn't care who we used, right? They'll use al-Qaeda. They'll create ISIS. Remember, as I pointed out, Baghdadi and a bunch of al-Qaeda prisoners, al-Qaeda, were turned out of jail and by Obama and the U.S. government, and they immediately created ISIS. Surprise, surprise. And then we help these people get control of this area. The Syrian town of Barisha, where the safe house was found, was just in walking distance from our NATO ally, Turkey. What a surprise. As Hirsch had said about the Obama raid, he said, this is false, as are many other elements of the Obama administration's account. The White House's story might have been written by Lewis Carroll. Would bin Laden, a target of massive international manhunt, really decide that a resort town 40 miles from Islamabad would be the safest place to live and to command al-Qaeda's operations? Was he hiding in the open? Oh, that's what America said. When they said, well, that really was him. Well, that means that he was hiding in the open. That this was really Baghdadi or whatever. He was hiding in the area that we had helped al-Qaeda take. Washington has since Idlib's complete takeover by what it dubbed moderate rebels in 2015. Washington has since actively prevented the Syrian army and the Russians from returning that area back to Damascus control. So not only did we carve that area out, helping them from just a few miles across the border in Turkey, our NATO ally, that's now the big villain in Washington, but we also protected that area from the Syrians and from the Russians, you know, because Baghdadi was hiding there. Just let that sink in. As we head, and also because John McCain's making trips over there and doing photo ops, giving them weapons and so forth. And so he was found in the area that we've been protecting for years. And then if we look at another suspicious aspect of the bin Laden raid, that was that the Obama administration came out, according to Cy Hirsch in his article. He said the Obama administration came out with conflicting accounts and then required the Navy SEALs who carried out the attack to sign non-disclosure agreements. Now, see, this is what's so genius about President Trump. this is all about the dog. And I don't know if they had the dog sign a non-disclosure agreement or not with a paw print, right? But, you know, you don't have to worry about the dog talking about anything. They did have to worry about the SEALs, nevertheless, even though they were very careful to get them to all sign non-disclosure agreements. You know, we subsequently had that same team, many of them lured into an ambush, killed. We had I've had the father on multiple times of one of the Navy SEALs who was outraged that the military lied about what happened. Later he saw pictures of his son's body, you know, and what had happened, and realized that what they said about the Chinook helicopters and about the ambush and so forth was an absolute lie. So they lied about his son's death, trying to get justice for that. Why would they do that? Why would they have them sign NDA agreements? Why would we have the largest number of Navy SEALs ever killed in an ambush? And why would they lie about how they were killed in the ambush? The raid was conducted, says Seymour Hirsch, with the cooperation and knowledge of the Pakistani government. The SEALs faced no guard force. Bin Laden was a cripple, unable to get out of bed, and was shot so many times by the SEALs that there was nothing left to be buried at sea. They could just throw the body pieces out over the mountains. Baghdadi, well, it's now clear that he was protected by somebody in Turkey. The Turks knew where he was, and until yesterday had kept him safe. And so had the American government. And when we come back, we'll talk about more lies about what's been going on in Syria as the OPCW, we have a reporter who has talked to two whistleblowers, the reporter Jonathan Steele, and they completely blow that narrative out of the water as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Let's take a look at the OPCW. And of course, they were at the center of these, it was annual, actually. We had an attack, a false flag attack in Syria every year around March. March to April. That's why I said, beware the Ides of March. It's when these people want to go to war. And it would always be in an area that the Syrian government with the Russians was going in and clearing out our allies, ISIS, who were working for a regime change. And just as the Syrian government and Russia were on the very verge of taking these people down, then inexplicably they would just launch a bunch of gas attack and do the very thing that was the one thing that would get us involved. And we would have people like Ivanka and Lindsey Graham going hysterical, you know, and Nikki Haley. You got to look, they gassed kids and so forth. It's like, well, why would they do that? First of all, what would be their motivation? Why, as they're mopping up this operation here, why would they do the one thing that would beg us to come and get involved? And so it kind of failed on that. And then each one of these attacks, eventually, the evidence showed that it was a lie. And so on the third one, at Duma, we had Ivanka, and she talked President Trump into launching some missiles there. Also, the histrionics of Nikki Haley. Remember this, conservatives. I know a lot of people in the Republican Party just love Nikki Haley. She is a bigger warmonger than Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, and just as dishonest. And so she and Theresa May were just beside themselves, hysterical about all this stuff. And also they had to sex it up on that third year, you know, because they'd already done this twice and been exposed as a lie. So the third time, they added the alleged Skripal poisoning that they said took place in the UK. They said, oh, look, it was Novichok gas that was used against this double agent from Moscow who had been living, you know, in the UK for something like a decade. And it wasn't, why would, at that particular point in time, why would the Russians gas him just as they are launching a chemical attack in Syria? Now, that in and of itself was suspicious. And it happened just a few miles from Portendown, which is the UK chemical weapons area. And you had a nurse who attended them for about a half hour. And as people were accusing Vladimir Putin of this, they said it's Novichok. And so it has to be the Russians because, you know, the Russians were the ones who produced Novichok. Well, as I pointed out at the time, that even if it had been Novichok, everybody had access to those chemical weapons after the Soviet Union fell. It was basically an arms bazaar, and they were writing stories about how dangerous it was and how we had to do something about it. We had to get involved in that area because all this, these chemical weapons and nuclear weapons, suitcase nukes, remember that? All that stuff could go on the loose and go on the black market, be sold to terrorists and so forth. And yet it wasn't Novichok, because if it had been Novichok, as they asked Vladimir Putin, he just laughed at him. He said, they'd be dead. Novichok was seven times more potent than our VX nerve gas. And then you had a doctor who showed up and worked on the two of them for a half hour. She would have been dead as well. But, you know, later that day and the next day, we had all the pictures of the people in hazmat crew, our outfits, right? You know, these bio suits working at the scene of the crime when you'd had a doctor there for a half hour. And all the absurdities that happened. I mean, they eventually bought the house and tore it down and all this other kind of stuff. But as far as the OPCW goes, you had Putin say, well, release the samples. And it took them many, many months to actually send the samples to OPCW. And when they did, there was a little bit of a hint from the Swiss lab. There's only about a half dozen labs that are authorized by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons to do these analyses. And the Swiss lab that did it said, we found BZ gas. Now, BZ gas would be consistent. It's a class 2 chemical weapon, not a completely weaponized thing, but it's an industrial chemical used in dry cleaning, which doesn't have any connection to Russia. They don't use it. It's used in the West. But it's an industrial chemical that can be used as a weapon, but it's not designed as a weapon like nerve gas is. And it would be consistent with what that doctor who worked on them for a half hour said. She said they seemed like they had had an opioid overdose. And that's consistent with BZ gas, or BZ as they call it in the UK. And then they had this little message. They said, and we found a small, pristine, undegraded sample of Novichok. Now remember, this was months after the alleged poisoning. So that was kind of their little, you know, they don't want to go right out and say, This is all a lie because these people want to continue to be an authorized lab for the OPCW. But now we've had an award-winning journalist, Jonathan Steele, said that he attended a briefing by a new whistleblower. This is the second whistleblower from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons investigating that attack in Douma, that alleged attack in Douma. He claimed that the OPCW suppressed his findings, the whistleblower did. His findings were suppressed because they contradicted the organization's official conclusion that a chlorine gas attack had taken place. And this is the second whistleblower that has come forward exposing the lies that are being put out by the OPCW about the Douma investigation. The first one was a leaker who came from the engineering assessment document, which surfaced this past May, that contradicted the OPCW's official ballistics report. And so the first guy says, Jonathan Steele, in this interview with Caitlin Johnston that she reported here, she archived it. Jonathan Steele said, I was in Brussels last week. I attended a briefing by a whistleblower, one of the inspectors that was sent to Douma in Syria of last year, April 2018. The allegations by the rebels that Syrian airplanes had dropped two canisters of chlorine gas, killing up to 43 people. He said he was in charge of picking up the samples in that area and in neutral areas. And so the journalist asked him, so what did you find? He said, we found there was no difference. In other words, there was no increase in chlorine gas in that area. And if you remember at the time, we had other journalists who went in there who spoke, award-winning journalists who spoke Arabic or spoke the language. He interviewed people and they said, yeah, people couldn't breathe because the bombing campaign was so intensive and there was so much dust that people did actually die because they couldn't breathe, but it wasn't chlorine gas. And he said, he talked to a doctor. He said, I was treating people for dust exposure. And then one of these white hat guys came in and screamed, chlorine gas or whatever, nerve gas, and panicked everybody. And that was the basis for all that. He said nobody had even suggested that until a white hat came in and did that. And so the journalist said, this whistleblower said, the buildings where the people allegedly died, there was no extra chlorinated organic chemicals, any more so than in streets everywhere else. I put this to the OPCW for comment, and they haven't replied. But it suggests that a lot of this was propaganda. And so they said, who would you say the propaganda is being led by? Jonathan Steele said it's led by the rebel side to try to bring in American planes, which in fact did happen because you had Ivanka, who was so distressed about the pictures of kids who were choking. Well, you know, it's horrible when war happens. You know how that war happened? It was people like Obama and Lindsey Graham and John Brennan and John McCain who decided that they wanted to change the regime in this country that has, where the government has about a $12 billion budget, that tiny country. It was so important for them that they decided that people would die. And people who will kill people, other people, in mass. You know, like Madeleine Albright, who said the 500,000 kids who died, that was worth it. I don't care. You know, people who are like that have no problem lying about what they're doing. They have no problem working with terrorists because, quite frankly, they are terrorists. They are terrorists. We have a terrorist regime in Washington. It's called the military-industrial complex. And we got a lot of people in the CIA and the Pentagon who are complicit in it, who are running it. It's absolutely amazing that in my name and your name, we have wars all across this world that are killing millions of people for these little geopolitical games of people like Henry Kissinger and others. And it is bipartisan. And so we're going to talk about how President Trump used a brilliant psyop when he came back. I'll give him another pat on the back. Folks, if you want to keep this show going, if you want to support us here at InfoWars, we really do need your support. We really do. And we've got a massive discount begging for your support. 40 to 70% off, dozens of products, free shipping, double Patriot points for discounts in the future. We got Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine, 70% off. New products like VasoBeat, 50% off. InfoWarsStore.com.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
You know, we look at the many different attempts to drag us further and further into the Syrian war, to get public approval for it, because they never got congressional approval for it. And even though you had a lot of people saying, we don't want to be Al-Qaeda's Air Force after the first time they tried that, we were very vocal in leading that. You had Ron Paul talking about that as well. You had soldiers who had put, you know, something over their face so they couldn't see who it was, and they'd hold up signs, I'm not going to be Al-Qaeda's Air Force. We knew that ISIS was Al-Qaeda. We knew that it was a false flag. We knew what John McCain and others were doing, CIA, John Brennan, Obama, and so forth. We knew how they had created these people, how they were using them for regime change, how they were using the Kurds, for example, who are Marxist-Leninists. They were using them to overthrow the Syrian regime. And that first time they did it, first you had, I forget who was first, maybe it was the UN, maybe it was Russia saying that it wasn't the case. And then eventually the Pentagon said, yeah, that wasn't a gas attack by the Syrian government. It could have been done by anybody if it was, in fact, a gas attack. And then you had a subsequent one, and you had a CNN reporter going over, and they were trying to sex it up and tell everybody it was a gas attack. And you even had a CNN reporter take a piece of cloth that was on the ground and sniff it. It's this level of the kind of stuff that you saw with the Skripal poisoning, right? Yeah, well, if it was nerve gas, as they were telling people, you'd be dead, or whatever kind of gas, and the particular gas that they were putting out at the time would not have had any smell. It just would have killed her. But again, these are the absurd levels of it. But just think about the fact that they did this every year. Every year. Right at the same time. That in and of itself is suspicious, just as suspicious as the fact that it would always happen at a point of conflict where the Syrian government was winning, you know, just a day before it happened. Oh, yes, well, the rebels say that it was done by the Syrian government and it was an atrocity, so we got to get in there. They never got public opinion on their side. They never got an authorization from Congress, but they put thousands of troops there anyway, didn't they? They don't really care if you agree. They don't really care if you buy their lies or not. And they'll keep lying. And so in this particular incident, as I said, Jonathan Steele was in Brussels and he heard a briefing by whistleblower to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. They're supposed to be the fact finders, the truth tellers, and it appears that the OPCW was kind of acting like the fact finders and truth finders that we have at Snopes or the Southern Poverty Law Center, or these other people who have been put in the position of having some kind of a special power to discern truth. And they are the final arbiters of truth and the authorities that we all have to bow down to. And they, the OPCW, seems to be just as much of a propaganda institution as Snopes or the SPLC or Facebook or Twitter. Because the first whistleblower looks at the chemicals. He looks at the chemicals in those areas. And then in general areas, he said there wasn't any increase in chlorine gas there. And then the other whistleblower said that he went in. That was a few months ago. There was a leaked report by a person who looked into the ballistics as to whether or not these cylinders had been dropped by planes, looking at the damage of the buildings and the damage on the sides of the cylinders. And he concluded that the higher probability was that these cylinders are placed on the ground rather than dropped from planes. And this is exactly what we had seen the previous year. We did in that particular case, and it went viral thanks to InfoWars, a picture of a canister of gas, and you could see that it was laying on its side and punctured on its side. It wasn't dropped, fired ballistically, and so forth. All right, we'll be right back. I got one final thing to say about this. The most dangerous moment in human history. What it tells us about war when we come back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
When JFK was Trump, this is being put out by Politico. On the day that we have the Democrats moving with their trick-or-treat rules, vote that they're going to have today, and they're not fooling anybody, quite frankly. They can wear whatever costume they want. But we know exactly what this is about. It's not just Tom Arnold saying, you know, we had in the debate that strange gaffe from Joe Biden. You know, President Trump has to be removed from office on the 17th. And then changes the subject, kind of stutters and moves on. And it's like, what? What's he talking about on the 17th? Well, that was 2 days before, on the 17th, that President Trump was scheduled to go to Dallas. Right? So a lot of people said, you know, what's going on with this? Alex went up. I have bullhorned out of a armored personnel carrier. I mean, what you can do when something like this comes out, whether you know, is to expose it and make sure that it doesn't happen. And we had Tom Arnold say, "Don't get too cocky." You know, JFK had a lot of supporters in Dallas too, as President Trump was going there. And now we have on Politico Jack Schaefer, when JFK was Trump, is that a veiled threat? Now, in the body of the article, what he's saying is, in the rush to criticize the current president, we risk forgetting the lessons of the Kennedy years. There is danger in relying too heavily on the wisdom of the elders. He said, have we ever had a president who rejects the advice of top intelligence leaders, who trusts his family more than those who have a lifetime of experience? Yes, we have. And his name was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And he says, they're not similar men. They're not similar presidents. But anyway, you know, he goes on through this and talks about how he rejected, how JFK rejected the advice of the people around him. And there's a piece from Ray McGovern off of Consortium News talking about a recent book by Daniel Ellsberg, the guy who was involved with the Pentagon Papers leak. But this book is about the most dangerous moment in human history, the Cuban Missile Crisis that happened October the 27th, 1962. I remember that very well as a child. Yes, I am that old. I was old enough to know what was going on because I was in Florida at the time and everybody was really panicking because we were so close to Cuba as this Cuban crisis was happening. And in the book, called the Doomsday Machine, kind of a reference to Dr. Strangelove, right? Daniel Ellsberg focuses on, well, actually the excerpt that comes out of this book by Ray McGovern, kind of focuses on a submarine captain who, in their opinion, was a guy who stopped a nuclear war. It was that close. There was a lot of different points where it could have blown up. And it really does underscore, yeah, there you go, there's Dr. Strangelove. It really does underscore, just like Dr. Strangelove did, how when you start playing with war, when it becomes a business model, when it becomes the fundamental thing underlying your political power, your economy as it has in America, that you are really playing with fire here. Arkhipov is the guy's name. He overruled his colleagues on a Soviet submarine, a B-59, who were readying a 10-kiloton nuclear torpedo to fire at the USS Randolph Task Force. The USS Randolph was an aircraft carrier. And, you know, the aircraft carrier is the center of a task force. All the other ships that are around it essentially support it. It is the mother load, if you will. So it was the USS Randolph Task Force. Near Cuba without the required authorization from Moscow, they were going to fire this 10-kiloton nuclear torpedo. Communication links with naval headquarters were down, and Arkhipov's colleagues were convinced that World War III had already started. After hours of battering by depth charges from U.S. warships, the captain of the B-59 sub, Savitsky, screamed, "We're going to blast them now. We will die, but we will sink them all. We will not disgrace our Navy." But Captain Arkhipov's permission was also required, and he countermanded it. And That's why we didn't have 6 million people die. It got that close. Because he says there's every reason to believe that if the carrier, the USS Randolph, and perhaps all of its accompanying destroyers would have been destroyed by a nuclear explosion if they had launched that. And the source of the explosion would have been a mystery to the commanders and the Navy and to the officials at XCOM, since no submarines were known to be in the region. No submarines known to be in the region were carrying nuclear warheads. They knew there was a submarine there, but they didn't know it was carrying nuclear warheads. The clear implication was that the cause of the nuclear destruction would have been from a medium-range missile from Cuba whose launch had not been detected. The very event that President Kennedy had announced 5 days earlier would lead to a full-scale nuclear attack on the Soviet Union. So if they had launched it, in the confusion of war, a lot of people would have said, well, I think that came from Cuba. We wouldn't have noticed it because it was so close to Cuba. We don't think there's any submarines there that have nuclear weapons. They were wrong about that, right? Just like later on, Robert McNamara, who was also in the loop with this, Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, National Security Advisor McGeorge Bundy, later learned that many of their key assumptions were wrong, dead wrong, dangerously wrong. Just as you had Robert McNamara on that documentary that he did with Errol Morris, The Fog of War, shortly before he died, he confessed that, yeah, the Gulf of Tonkin, that was, you know, fog of war. We were confused. Nothing really happened. Yeah, it was a false flag. It was a false flag. And to try to cover it up, he said, forget about Vietnam. You know, if we'd lost the war, we would have been tried for war crimes because of the massive bombing campaigns that we carried out and firebombing campaigns that we carried out in Germany and so forth. Yeah, right. Right. Try to cover himself. Oh, yeah, you know, well, everybody likes World War II. They don't like my Vietnam War that I kept us in for a long time, that I maneuvered us into with a false flag. But then you know that war that you call the good war, you know, fighting the Nazis and so forth? Well, we would have been war criminals because we killed so many people. No, he was just trying to cover for himself. But he was very candid, very candid. That was an amazing documentary. You know, Errol Morris, he has this, he calls it the Interatron, I think is what he called it. It's essentially a teleprompter where he puts a camera in it instead of displaying text for people to read. And before he became a filmmaker, he was an investigator, an interrogator. And he gets people's confidence up because they're just talking to a box and also his personal skills. And he can get people to say anything. You know, one of his first movies that he did that was A Thin Blue Line. He got a guy who was in prison to confess to a murder. They were going to kill a guy for killing a cop, and the guy was completely innocent. And so he was doing a documentary about that, and he got the real killer to confess. And he actually got Robert McNamara to confess. But you realize how dangerous this is? As Ray McGovern says, as for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, President JFK had already concluded that the top military were unhinged Russophobes. Russia, 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 Russia. You know, kind of like the Democrats today. You know, pull the trigger. We got to get into Syria. We got to come after the Russians. We got to escalate this. Anybody that tries to ease tensions with Russia, oh, now they are a traitor. They're working with Putin. So that's the other similarity that they won't talk about between Trump and JFK, is how unhinged the military-industrial complex is. And that includes the corporate media, as well as all of these Democrats who are calling Russia, Russia, Russia about everything. These people are playing with fire. They're not only playing with the lives of other people in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, they're playing with your life as well. We'll be right back. You know, a lot of people think Bernie Sanders is the current Ron Paul. They couldn't be more different. I want to play for you a clip of Bernie Sanders criticizing President Trump because he didn't protect Bernie's comrades, the Marxist Kurds. Here's Bernie Sanders.
Well, my understanding, interestingly enough, is that that mission was accomplished with information supplied by the Kurds. And as we know, Trump has turned his back and betrayed the Kurds, something that I think will have a negative impact not only in that region of the world, but in terms of our relationship with allies from one end of this planet to the other.
The Kurds are Marxist terrorists. They were allies because they were 15% of the population, the largest ethnic group inside Syria. They wanted independence, so the CIA knew they would be reliable allies in what the CIA really wanted to do, which was to take down Syria. As Wesley Clark, a Democrat, had told us, he said, hey, I was told right after 9/11, we've been working on this. We got our list of countries, and Syria's on the list, and so forth. And then in Turkey, the Turks don't like the Kurds because in Turkey, the Kurds are 20% of their population, the largest ethnic minority. And there as well, they are Marxists who want an independent state. And the two were sharing weapons there and so forth. And that was an area where these Kurd allies had been protecting Baghdadi, as I pointed out, been protecting Baghdadi for years. After we had helped the Kurds and these other people to take that area. And let's understand, we helped the Kurds. They didn't help us. They're nothing without American military weapons. Come on. If these guys, they needed the weapons from Lindsey Graham and John McCain and John Brennan and Barack Obama. And we created ISIS. Yeah. Obama created ISIS. I didn't create him. I tried to keep Obama from happening. So I didn't want to see ISIS being created as well. But, you know, they released all these al-Qaeda people out. And lo and behold, they decided they were going to set up an ISIS state in Iraq and Syria. That's what ISIS stands for. And then we protected that area from the Syrian government and Russia, who was invited in by the Syrian government to help them. We protected that area. We protected not only the Kurds, but we protected Baghdadi and ISIS and al-Nusra, all those people that we called moderates. No, they were al-Qaeda. They were al-Qaeda. And so, you know, when you want to talk about Bernie Sanders, you think he's against war? He's not. He's lying to you about what's going on, as much as anybody is. And clueless as well. And maybe it's just because he likes these Marxist comrades there. Then we've got the Arizona Democrat Party chair. Her name is Felicia Rotellini. And she says that President Trump has aligned himself with ISIS. So we betrayed the Kurds and we've aligned ourselves with ISIS as a part of this narrative. Here's what she has to say.
The inspiration of leaders who are going to put people first is so important, and that's going to make people vote. Another reason why people are going to vote, because Donald Trump is manipulating the White House and has aligned himself with ISIS.
He is the White
House. Saudi Arabia.
I have to say that that is not true.
But just
that is
let
not
me
true.
Say, the just, most yeah. important thing that we can do Lord. Today is vote for civility, vote for a president who's not going to align himself with the most dangerous foreign nations that are the reason why we had 9/11.
Okay, yeah, the reason why. Okay, well, there's so much that we could talk about there, but she is just the Arizona Democrat Party chair, and the person that you heard interrupting her was the Arizona Republican Party chair. Now, that's not true. That's not true. Nobody's going to talk about how Obama released Baghdadi and these other al-Qaeda people from prison. No, no, not going to talk about that. And then we have President Trump's acting director of national counterterrorism, and his name is Russell Travers. He is telling us all that, you know, ISIS remains potent. Yes, it was nice to get that guy, but it really doesn't mean anything. We got to stay in the area. We got to keep fighting ISIS because this is what the Never Trumpers are always going to do. They are also the Never Leavers. They are the warmongers who are always there. And it was kind of interesting when that Democrat chair said President Trump is manipulating the White House. See, she knows, and you should understand as well, that the deep state establishment, and that includes the people at the Pentagon, the people who are in these permanently entrenched bureaucracies, the people at the FBI and the CIA who have been working since President Trump got elected and even before he got elected to overthrow the election, all these people, they are the White House. They are the establishment. And she knows it. You know it as well, right? And, yeah, President Trump is manipulating them. So let's talk about how President Trump is manipulating them beautifully, quite frankly. Because as she says, Trump has aligned himself with ISIS. Well, that's just a dog that don't hunt no more. Not if President Trump has taken out the number one and number two leaders there. And the ISIS, the leader of ISIS and the number two that's there. As Tom Lifson says on American Thinker, Trump's praise for the dog that got Baghdadi is a PSYOP classic. Because he's saying, it's not only, he's not looking at it from the standpoint that I am, where I don't believe any of the story, that President Trump just made this up just like in Wag the Dog. You know, well, I'll take your narrative and I'll raise you one. I'll take your Obama story. And we'll increase that. But he said, he pointed out he's also trolling the Muslims. Muslims believe that dogs are unclean. And so to have this hero of theirs, Baghdadi, taken down by an unclean animal is a beautiful move by President Trump, hitting both ways, quite frankly. Calling BS on Obama and McRaven's hero stuff, he one-ups them. Actually, he takes down two leaders. He doesn't just get the leader of Al-Qaeda, but he gets the Al-Qaeda guy that became the leader of ISIS and his number two. And he does it with a dog that doesn't have to sign an NDA. So as Thomas Lifson points out, it harkens back to the stories that we have about General Pershing as he was fighting Muslim terrorists in the Philippines in the late 19th century. How he would bury them with pig carcasses in order to prevent their entry into heaven. Also the story that he lined them up for a firing squad, some of these guys that had committed terrorist acts. Lined them up for a firing squad. They took the bullets and they dipped them in pig's blood before they shot him dead. Left one guy alive, sent him back to tell his comrades, that type of thing. So maybe that's what's going on here. You know, we look at this with the dog picture. But they're outraged because President Trump tweeted out a Photoshopped image honoring the dog. You see, he was wagging that dog in their face again yesterday. He puts out a picture of himself putting a medal around the dog's neck. There you can see it. And says, American hero. And we've got Jim Acosta right on that as a fact checker. You know, oh, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And the White House acknowledged, said, it is Photoshopped. The dog is not here at the White House yet.
Using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Gerald Celente. We're going to get him on because we had interest rates cut by the Fed yesterday, and the Fed chair, Powell, talking about what he saw coming forward in the future. But the person that I really trust to predict the future, to look at trends, is Gerald Celente. You can find his work at trendsresearch.com, and you can find Gerald on Twitter at Gerald Celente. And, of course, you go to trendsresearch.com, you will also be able to sample Trends Journal, the publication that Gerald Celente has by subscription, and they have increased the frequency at which it's published now. Tell us what that is, Gerald. How frequently do you publish a journal now?
Well, it's a weekly. It went from a quarterly to a monthly, and now because things are happening so rapidly, we've gone to a weekly.
Yeah, yeah. As they say, you know, how does one go bankrupt? Well, gradually and then suddenly. So you got to step up the publication to a weekly. So tell us what you think about the Fed rate cut what the Fed chair said and where you think the economy is going with all this.
Well, they are going to keep, we believe that by a year from November, we're going to see interest rates at either zero or negative in the United States. they have to keep pumping in this monetary methadone to keep the addicted bull running. And that's all this is, with their repos, putting in hundreds of billions of dollars into the overnight markets so the gamblers could get money to keep gambling, and now just lowering interest rates again to keep the economy going. And it's going to work for a while. And you're seeing it with the new mortgage applications, with home sales. The lower the rates go, they increase, but they're not on fire. They're not. It's not like, you know, things are really booming, but they have to keep doing this to keep the false economy moving forward.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I think there's a plunge protection team out there. Oh, it's a conspiracy theory. There's no plunge protection team. Now they do this kind of stuff openly, and now they're going to make it permanent. And the Fed chair, as he was saying yesterday, is, well, I'm doing this. This is just the last one. I'm really not sure we're going to do that in the future, but you think they're going to keep doing it?
Well, absolutely. They will do it. And again, you know, we were the first to call it back in the end of last year in December, when you saw the Dow having its worst December since the Great Depression. And they were going to aggressively raise interest rates. People forget that they were going to raise interest rates in 2019, either two or three times more. And now what have they lowered? They've lowered them three times. So it's a global slowdown. You've had over 50 central banks this year lower interest rates. And they're just going to keep going down as much as they can to keep propping up the economy. But here's the deal. Even the International Mafia of Monetary Fund, they're saying that these low interest rates aren't going to work much more. They're running out of juice. So they're asking for more fiscal stimulus. So you think you have a big budget deficit now? I got an idea. The government's going to create jobs. Oh, yeah, you're going to hire a bunch of worthless people to put more pressure on us and give us more bureaucracy.
Yeah,
so of
course.
That's what they're going to start doing.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, one of the other things that they floated out there is the idea they're going to do a 50-year bond. That's another sign of insecurity and trying to tell people, oh, no, you can trust me. You can trust us. A 50-year bond.
You were the first show I said this on. We're going into the greatest depression.
Mm-hmm.
Look what's going on around the world. The world's on fire. Not only, you know, in California, Indonesia, the Amazon, not only that kind of fire. Look what's going on in Ecuador. Hey, how about let's go? Why don't we go to Chile, huh? It's wonderful there now in Santiago with millions of people to the streets. I got it. Let's go to Lebanon. Now, maybe Algeria is a better place. Hey, what's going on in Hong Kong? Don't know. What about Spain? You see the uprisings going on around the world?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I said it yesterday. I said, you know, when we see people pushing back against globalism, you know, one of the fourth turnings that we had, when we had the American Civil War, they had civil wars in Italy. You know, they had Garibaldi and his other, and they were changing the basis of how the economies were organized. They were moving from an agrarian state to an industrialized state, but they were also having a consolidation of power from regional power bases to a national power base. And I said, that kind of consolidation trend has gone through into the 20th century. They wanted to have world government. People are pushing back against that. They said, we don't think that's a good idea. And I said yesterday, I said, they're even pushing back against the idea that the nation state is going to serve them well. It's already too big, too distant, too concentrated. And so you got people in Canada talking on the western part of Canada now talking about how they want Wexit. I said, I think we're going to see this. And as you point out, you know, we got people that are, you know, unrest everywhere that's happening. The situation in Spain, that is causing tension between Spain and Brussels, because Brussels isn't handing over Puigdemont, who is the leader of the Catalonians, who wanted to get their independence from Spain. So we're seeing all of these different organizations that are breaking up, and it's being driven at the grassroots level by people who think that government has become too distant, too unresponsive to them, and they want something that's closer and more local. I think that's really a big trend. What do you think?
Well, you're 100% correct. The way you laid it out is just perfect and clear. And the other part of it is, of course, you know, when people have nothing, when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. Mm-hmm. And all they're doing is they're stealing more money from the people in the name of taxes and other expenses while the 1% keeps getting bigger. I mean, I'm not making those numbers up. What is it, 26 people in the world have more money than half the world's population combined? And they're overthrowing, and every government around the world virtually, they're corrupt mobsters. They're thieves and murderers, whether it's the Repulsivekins and the Dumbocrats in the United States or any other government around the world. And that's what the people are rebelling against. Of course, except in the USSA, where courage is gone and the people aren't fighting back.
Yeah, and what they're using is this increasing concentration of wealth that you're just pointing out, which is a real thing, and everybody knows it. And so the Democrats are using it, and I think that is a major factor contributing not only the indoctrination of the kids in college towards socialism and so forth, but it's also what they can actually see. And so the Democrats are using their indoctrination to tell them, but we've got another system. It's called communism and socialism, and we can give you free stuff, and you can come to us for free health care. I mean, we just had an analysis done looking at Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan because she doesn't want to talk about how it's going to be paid for, and they said, well, let's just run the numbers through here. And according to the figures that were done by Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, they said, well, there's a lot of different alternatives. You know, when you look at how much this is, that could be paid for by 32% payroll tax or 25% income surtax, or they could cut 80% of spending on everything that isn't entitlements, like the infrastructure, the Pentagon, and so forth, or they could just borrow the money. What do you think they're going to do, Gerald?
Well, you know, what did Orwell say? That the liberals become tomorrow's fascists? Mm-hmm. I mean, here are these low-life Democrats, they're the ones that gave, under the Clinton administration, they're the ones that made the richer a lot richer.
Oh,
I mean, you know, who are they kidding? They're the ones that passed most of the laws that gave the money to the – you forgot Obama? I mean, one after another, they're the ones that doled out the dough more than anybody else to the 1%.
Yeah, it was the Clinton administration that okayed the big merger between Nations Bank and Bank of America. And everybody said, whoa, that's going to set off a round of mergers. You're going to wind up with a half dozen banks. And guess what we wound up with? You know, and then they were also removed the Glass-Steagall Act, which prohibited them from getting involved in speculation since they had federal insurance. So it was put on after the Great Depression. We're going to have more with Gerald Celente when we come back, and we're also going to talk about what's going on in Syria with war and peace, because that's also a subject that is very dear to the heart of Gerald Celente, as it is with me. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Gerald Celente, and I want to talk to him about not only the economy, but war, because they're coming together in Syria. As President Trump said, well, we're going to bring the troops home. And he said, no, we're going to move the troops, and we're going to move them to protect the oil fields. And then he tweeted out, well, we're going to take the oil, get Exxon or some other company to come in and take that oil. So I want to get Gerald Celente's comments on that. Again, you can find him at trendsresearch.com. You can find Trends Journal there, a sample of that, and you can subscribe to that. Also, you can find Gerald on Twitter at Gerald Celente. Gerald, what do you think about this statement by President Trump over the weekend? I mean, clearly, you know, when I first heard him, repeat the pledge that he had made, saying we're going to get out of Syria, we're going to bring the troops home, I was very excited about that. I thought it was a brilliant move. I thought he was doing it to reestablish contact with a voter base that put him in that really wants that. Nobody in Washington wants this, but his voter base wants to bring the troops home. And yet what he did was first he moved some of them to Iraq, and now he's saying, well, now we're going to move them to the oil fields. And then he says, now we're going to take the oil. And he actually had said that about the Iraq war, criticizing the previous administrations, even though he said the war wasn't justified, the weapons of mass destruction were fake, we shouldn't have gone there in the first place, but then he said, well, we should have taken the oil. So what do you think is going to happen? What do you make of these latest statements and moves by President Trump?
Well, let's go to Venezuela and remember Bolton, the former national security advisor. And it made it very clear that, you know, Venezuela is sitting on the largest oil reserves in the world. And Bolton said words to the effect that we need to get American companies in there and it'd be good, American oil companies in there, and it'd be good for the American people. We wrote about it in the Trends Journal. And so, as I used to say, you know, you think the United States would have invaded Iraq and Libya if their major export was broccoli, you know, so it, this is criminality at right in front of our eyes. Because number one, when I was listening before it went on the air, when they had BS Bernie Sanders on your show, you had some of the clips there, you know, we abandoned the Kurds, you know, like most people didn't know what a Kurd was, you know, Kurds in way maybe. Yeah. And now all of a sudden we've abandoned our great allies, the Kurds. Yeah, people we hire to overthrow the Assad government, all this baloney about ISIS, shove it, everybody, ain't the deal at all. It was, remember Obama, Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice, Assad has to go. And that's what the Kurds and other, and along with Al-Qaeda and other Islamic groups, after they overthrew Gaddafi, they brought him into Syria to do the same job. So going back to the oil, we're illegally in Syria. Could anybody get that in their head? And we could end the damn conversation. You're in a foreign country stealing their natural resources. It's against the law. Oh, I don't like
you know
that
what?
Guy.
Yeah, when I saw that policy.
We can go in there and take what we want.
Yeah, when I saw that policy, Gerald, you know, President Trump had just said, we don't want to be the world's policeman. But then he goes over there and says, well, protect the oil fields and then we'll take the oil. And I said, so now we're not going to be the world's policeman. We're going to be the world's pirates. And
you
the next
it.
Day, Barry McCaffrey, who I'm not a fan of because he was, you know, the drug czar under, what was it, Clinton or something. But anyway, he comes out and he says, so now we're going to become pirates. And that really is what we're talking about here. We're just talking about open piracy. We invade and we take your stuff.
And murder.
Yeah.
And
well,
murder.
That's what pirates do. Yeah.
Yeah, murdering people. Look what happened in Syria, a country that did nothing to us, over 600,000 people dead, 10 million displaced. I wonder why there's a refugee crisis. Can't figure it out. Yeah, you bomb the hell out of these joints. Would you leave? Oh, and then you know what I love? When they call these people militants and terrorists, when they want to get even with you for you killing everybody they love and destroying their country. You and I would say, oh, well, that's fine. Come on in and kill more of us. We wouldn't fight back, would we?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, just completely ignoring, as they come after President Trump, completely ignoring the fact that Obama released Baghdadi and released all these other people out of a prison in Iraq so that they could create ISIS. And the fact that Baghdadi was hiding in that area that was controlled by our allies, the Kurds, and we were protecting him. We were keeping the Syrian government from coming in and getting them. I mean, it's absolutely absurd, this narrative. And, you know, you're talking about 600,000 people killed. Well, Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton and the Republicans that are pushing this war, they would all say it was worth it.
That's right. Well, that's what, of course, you, as you repeat, you know, Madeleine Albright saying from Bill Clinton's sanctions back in Iraq when that slimy slick Willie was president, that killed over 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five. And she's on CBS with Leslie Stahl and said the price was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't even have the decency to deny that she had done that. Just
see,
it was worth it.
The point that everyone to me is missing, we have sociopaths and psychopaths, murderers and thieves, running and ruining our nation. As I call them, the repulsivekins and the dumbocrats. By their deeds you shall know them. How many more wars do they have to start illegally slaughtering millions of people and costing we, the taxpayers, trillions of dollars? And how much more of our money do they have to steal to give it to their friends in the names of too big to fail and the criminals that are too big to fail, are too big to jail? When are people going to wake up and say the entire system is corrupt? It's murdering us and stealing our future. When are they going to say that? Instead, they say, don't forget to vote. If you don't vote, then you get what you deserve. That's how stupid it's declined into the mentality of the American people.
And, of course, Gerald, what they don't talk about is what happened just across our border, very close to our border, when you had the Mexican government come in and kind of, I don't know if they were looking for him or if they stumbled on him, but they momentarily captured El Chapo's son. And then you had a massive firefight that went for several hours. A lot of innocent people got killed there. And eventually the government surrendered and said, here, you take him back. Let us go. And a video has now surfaced of these Mexican government troops begging them for mercy after they arrested El Chapo's son. Now, this is happening right across our border, but we can't use our military to even stop traffic from coming across the border. They're going to use this war on drugs that's turned Mexico into a failed narco state. They're going to use that as a threat against us. They're going to use the threat of terrorism, which they have funded everywhere else. They're going to use that as a threat against us. And then I think, Gerald, they're going to use this border situation as a threat to push biometric surveillance on everybody. And we're all going to beg for it.
Oh, yeah. And it's happening. And it's going to keep getting worse. And again, as economic conditions decline and there are more and more protests and more rebellions, they're going to crack down harder and harder. Welcome to the police state of America, because that's what it's turning into. And it's only going to get worse unless the people rise up against it.
Yeah, it's people have to see through what is really going on. They have to understand, you know, how these situations are manufactured crises to get us begging the government to take away our freedom so they can keep us safe.
Look, you have these phony liberals like Bernie Sanders. I'm 15 minutes away from Woodstock, New York. I call these people with their quiche-eating grins and balsamic smiles. Oh, it's so terrible what we abandoned the Kurds. Oh, they're supposed to be liberals against war, and you're in a nation illegal, murdering people. Oh, but we're abandoning the Kurds. Yeah. That's how low it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And how do we get people to wake up? You know, we talk about this all the time, and yet we can't get anybody to listen to anything other than the corporate narrative that's coming out of the mainstream press. And now you're not even going to be able to buy ads even on Twitter. You know, President Trump, which is where he is kind of focused, he's not going to be able to buy ads. I think they're going to even step up the censorship. I think that's the first shot across the bow.
Here's the thing. It can happen. You're doing it with InfoWars and your program and the intelligence that you're giving to the people. We're doing it with the Trends Journal. And here is the reality. All these uprisings that I talked about before on the first half, all independent. No leader. The people are leading. And it's time for the people to lead. You're seeing it all around the world. No leader. It's the people that are leading. When the people get the spirit and the courage within them, and they gather together, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, Samuel Adams and women.
That's a very hopeful note to end on, and that's exactly right. That's exactly what it's going to take, and it's going to take people to understand the system has failed. Gerald Celente, you can find on Twitter at Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we were talking about President Trump and how he's using the dog. And he's using him to troll the Muslims because they don't like dogs. As a matter of fact, you can go back and look at all the Muslim scholars talking about how horrible dogs are and how Muhammad hated them and they killed all the dogs. And at one point says, well, we need them for hunting and so forth. So only kill the ones that are black. And this dog looks pretty dark, actually. So it's a way of trolling the Muslims with a dog. But it's also a way of trolling, I think, the military industrial complex. It all got behind that Obama killed Osama bin Laden story. President Trump had said, let's do it just like they did. Let's dispose of the body just like Obama did. We're going to do it exactly the same. Bury him at sea. and so forth. And so he tweeted out, American hero, and he tweeted out that picture you just saw of him putting the medal on the dog. And the Democrats just, that's not real. That's not real. And Jim Acosta especially. And now we have people that have returned the favor. They have the dog putting the medal on President Trump because it is a beautiful psyop. The two of them have pulled off here. And so the White House is saying, yeah, he's not at the White House, not yet. Maybe next week. You know, he's still in the theater, and he will be coming back. And, of course, there's also some Photoshop pictures. This is a warning for Jim Acosta and CNN. These are not real pictures. These are Photoshopped pictures. There's a picture of President Trump in the Oval Office, and he has now got a giant portrait of the dog behind him. Pull that one up. Yeah, there he is. And the dog there sitting next to him. By the way, CNN, that is not real either. That is also a Photoshop troll of people like you. And then there's the one of the dog in his cabinet. There it is right there. And I think that's exactly what President Trump's cabinet ought to look like. I think they'll be far more obedient than, you know, like John Bolton, who's going to be doing his best to stab President Trump in the back today in the hearings. As well as, yeah, that's the other one there. They got a picture of the dog. It says, knew about the raid, and a picture of Nancy Pelosi. Could not be trusted. That is a perfect psyop all the way around. A perfect trolling of all of these people. And President Trump, as he tweeted out the Photoshop image, he went on to say, very cute recreation. When he talked about the Photoshopped picture. But the live version of Conan will be leaving the Middle East for the White House sometime next week. And as I point out, he needs him, if not to fill in all of those different cabinet positions of the people who are trying to stab him in the back, he needs the dog to watch his back. As I've said many times, you know, the old adage, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. And President Trump hasn't had a friend in Washington. He hasn't had a dog either. And this would be the perfect one. I mean, you ought to make that one Photoshop picture of the dog in the background and the dog sitting by his side. He ought to make that happen. He ought to bring that dog and let that dog retire with honor, become part of the honor guard, and just live with him there in the White House. I think that's exactly what he ought to do. Because we're going to be going into what's happening with the impeachment trial. They're beginning this dog and pony show there in the House. They're beginning that today. I talked about the process yesterday and how rigged it was. Interestingly enough, NPR's headline, you know, they, like I pointed out, they went full Washington Post on Baghdadi, and this is their headline about it. As impeachment inquiry moves into the open phase, here's what to expect next. Do you really think this is going to be a fair and open process? I pointed out yesterday how they wrote the rules. They wrote the rules so the House always wins. In their story, they go on to say, well, you know, they quoted Schiff. The American people will hear firsthand about the president's misconduct. Oh, will we? Will we? Yes, we'll hear your story about it. And they write down, Republicans can request witnesses to appear, and they can request subpoenas to be approved, but those need to be approved by the majority. No, it needs to be approved by Schiff. They can't even tell the truth about that, NPR.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I didn't do a commercial break last hour. Let me, before we get into the impeachment, we have a major special going on right now at InfoWarsStore.com. 40 to 70% off, free shipping, double Patriot points. But, you know, when we talk about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, we have things like selenium, for example. Everybody knows that you need to have selenium. It's you can look it up. You can find how it is essential for your health. I first learned about it from my uncle who had prostate cancer, and he was absolutely sold on selenium. But, you know, whenever you look at an ingredient like that, how do you know that you're getting something that is pure? You know, there was an article on Dr. Mercola's site talking about why you should never buy CBD oil from Amazon. And he pointed out that 40% of all e-commerce is at Amazon.com. As a matter of fact, they got more people doing product search information at Amazon than they do on Google. And Amazon actually prohibits the sale of CBD products, even though they've got a lot of products that call themselves CBD. They call themselves CBD, but they don't have any CBD oil in them. You can get products that call themselves hemp oil on Amazon that do have CBD, but they're not allowed to advertise that they have CBD on it. Isn't that an interesting thing? Right? And of course, what is CBD? Well, that's the component of marijuana that doesn't have any hallucinogenic effects or psychoactive effects. It doesn't get you high. THC is that component. So when you look at marijuana, or you look at hemp, for example, hemp doesn't have THC in it. And it can be used to make ropes, it can be used to make clothing, and it can have CBD in it, so it can be used to make medical products. And so there's a THC component and there's a CBD component, and you can get those, and you can get something that's got both of those, or you can get one that's got, you know, only CBD in it. But again, Amazon, if it's, you know, you might find hemp oil that has CBD in it, but if they say that it's got CBD, it doesn't have it. So as Mercola points out, they're defrauding customers in both ways. There are no reputable companies selling CBD on Amazon. And I bring this up simply because when you look at something like selenium, for example, we have BioTrue selenium. You know, it's not a question as to whether or not selenium is good. I mean, you know, we just saw the article on, I think it was picked up on the Drudge Report. Oh, CBD, it's the new snake oil for this generation. It's not snake oil. One of the reasons why you had people thumbing their nose at the illegal war on drugs out of Washington that they started without passing the required constitutional amendment, as they did when they prohibited alcohol. Why did they have to do that to prohibit alcohol? Because we had a Congress at the time that still respected the Constitution. They don't do that anymore. They'll just say, well, you know, you can't have it unless I say you can have it. Well, people said, we don't care if you say we can't have it. We have used it on our own, and we've found that it is very effective. That's why it is so popular right now. But then you have Amazon defrauding people about it. Just like you've got the government defrauding people about the Constitution, they defraud you about the CBD. So it isn't a question of whether it's good or not. It's a question of, is it the real thing or is it a fraud? And that is something you're going to find everywhere. That's why the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, like selenium, BioTrue selenium, because it is organic, it is non-GMO, it is true selenium. The Vaso beet that we have, it's a vasodilator. It's made out of beet juice. It's 100% beet juice. We're not pulling a fast one on you like the people on Amazon. We've got stuff. Natural ingredients have real effects, beneficial effects. They're safe. They're natural. And they don't have the they're not in the concentration like pharmaceutical drugs are. They're not synthetic like the pharmaceutical drugs. That's where you really start to get into problems with things. And so safe, natural products like Knockout, for example, valerian root, chamomile, a lot of other things that are natural, that relax you, that help you to get to sleep. We call that Knockout. That's our all-natural sleep aid. That's 50% off right now, along with the BioTrue Selenium, along with Bodies, our all-natural anti-inflammation product, or Ultra 12, our vitamin B12, all of those 50% off. We've got some products 70% off, like Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do need your support. 40 to 70% off, all with free shipping, double Patriot points, InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's get into the impeachment. You know, we had the World Series happened, and somebody won. I don't know who it was. I don't really care. You can read all about it at the Drudge Report if you're interested. Probably if you're interested, you already know who won. You don't need me to tell you. But during the World Series, President Trump ran a commercial, and it was about the impeachment. I want to play that for you right now. Let's play video clip number one. You guys got that?
President Trump is changing Washington, creating 6 million new jobs, 500,000 new manufacturing jobs, cutting illegal immigration in half, obliterating ISIS, their caliphate destroyed, their terrorist leader dead. But the Democrats would rather focus on impeachment and phony investigations, ignoring the real issues. But that's not stopping Donald Trump. He's no Mr. Nice Guy, but sometimes it takes a Donald Trump to change Washington.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
All right, that's the fire back from President Trump. And, of course, that was on Twitter by his campaign manager, Brad Parscale. But now Twitter is saying they're not going to allow political advertising. Political message reach should be earned. So the question is, if you can't, are they saying that you can't buy ads or that you can't show ads? Let me tell you something. They're going to interfere with the election. That's in the cards. That's why they removed InfoWars in August before the November elections. This is election interference. And if you're not going to do anything about this with the Federal Trade Commission in terms of the monopoly that these people have been given, and I know why they're not going to do anything about it. Because it's the military-industrial complex and intelligence agencies that have given them the monopoly. I'm not going to go into that again. I do it frequently enough for people who tune in. But, yeah, they're not going to do anything about the monopolies. Will they do anything about the obvious interference with the elections? Will the FEC get involved? You know, we just had Mark Zuckerberg go before Congress. And even though you had authoritarian occasional cortex, the Marxist, begging, demanding, you know, shaking her finger, you know, at Mark Zuckerberg. And that really got the snowflakes excited when they saw her, you know, lecturing Zuckerberg about how he should shut down ads from people. He should be the fact checker. You're going to allow fake ads put out there? Everybody thinks the other side's narrative is fake. That's why we have elections. We should be able to hear both sides, and we should be able to make our choice about that. And actually, we can. You know, this little Puerto Rican Marxist ought to understand that in the Soviet Union, where they only had two papers, nobody believed anything they had to say. There was no truth in Pravda, they said, you know, which is Russian for truth. And there's no news in Izvestia, which was Russian for news. People can understand when they're being deceived. And we understand that we're being lied to, both by Jack Dorsey at Twitter when he says, well, political messaging reach must be earned. How do we do that, Jack, when you ban us? How do we do that when you shadow ban us? How do we do that when you control our reach? How does that work? And how do we earn that? Do we earn it with a social credit because we give out the message that you approve of? Maybe that would be it. Maybe that's an alternative. Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg could require that at the end of all these things, they could say, this message has been approved, not by the candidate's name. Remember the FEC rules? This message, instead of saying it's been approved by Hillary Clinton, they could say, this message has been approved by Mark Zuckerberg. You're a guardian of truth. We find it to be truthy. And so now we're going to allow this. We'll take a look at what the Democrats are doing right now when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Well, in this case, it's not a gun. He's got our First Amendment, and he's telling us we better beware. And we got people across the political spectrum. We got all the liberals. We've got many conservatives. We got places like the Heritage Foundation, biggest conservative think tank, Cato Institute, biggest libertarian think tank, people like Reason Magazine saying, shut up! They're a giant corporation. They can do whatever the hell they want to with your rights. Yeah, they own you. They own the public square. They own the internet. They were given it by DARPA. And, you know, it's theirs now. They can do whatever they want. And now you got Jack Dorsey saying, well, we're not going to allow political advertising. It's just going to be happy news. Happy news. That's, you know, the digital public square. They were going to be the free speech wing of the free speech party. He calls it the digital public square. But now the free speech wing of the free speech party says no free speech. No debates. No ads about political stuff. And, you know, we're not going to allow that in the digital public square. And they're couching it by saying, and you got Hillary Clinton applauding that. It's the right thing to do for democracy in America, you know, to shut down free speech, because that's the way she wins elections. You know, when people looked at the fact that Hillary Clinton came in, you want to talk about money in politics? Let's talk about money in politics, Hillary. Let's talk about the fact that you went into the bankrupt DNC. You gave them millions of dollars. You bought them lock, stock, and barrel. You bought the superdelegates. And then when people saw that and complained about the fact, and we talked about it through the primary process, how Bernie Sanders would go in and win by a big margin in some of the states. And guess what? Hillary Clinton would get more delegates. How'd that work out? Well, she bought the DNC. And we had a lot of delegates inside get upset with it. And when they leaked out the information, show how dirty it was, and it was people on the inside, it wasn't the Russians, but when internal people leaked it out, that's what WikiLeaks told us. They said it was not a state actor. They've never lied to us. We even had a former UK ambassador who said, I went to the U.S., I was handed that information by an insider on a thumb drive. You had William Binney, who has always told us the truth, the honest former global technical head of the NSA. He and others ran an analysis on some of the files and said, look, here's the time. You can see when it was created, when it was finished writing and so forth. That couldn't happen over the internet. This was something that was handed to somebody validating what they had said at WikiLeaks. And instead, how did Hillary cover that up? She invented the specter of foreign invasion. It was, don't look at those files about me and how I rigged the process, bought it with the millions of dollars that I got through graft and corruption over the years. Don't look at that. You know, she had previously told us that, you know, they were broke when they left the White House. That's why they had to steal some things as they were leaving, right? The Clintons. But they had enough money that she could buy the DNC. And don't look at those files. It was Russians. Think about that. It was Russians. Don't read that. It was Russians who gave that stuff out there, who put that out there. That was a narrative when I was at the, when I covered the convention live. I didn't buy it then. I certainly don't buy it 3 years later. And so you want to talk about money in politics, Hillary? Well, we can talk about you. And now she's floating that again, saying, you know, the Democrat Party is bankrupt. They can't even stay solvent. For 3 years, they're bankrupt again. And she said, we're going to be outspent and outlied. They're going to need Hillary Clinton to come in with her millions of dollars and bail them out again. Now, if you're worried about there's being too much money in politics, why is that? It's because there's too much power in Washington. They not only have power over every detail and aspect of our lives, but they also have the power to make certain corporations succeed and make sure that you fail. And so you better get a patron in Washington. You better pay them off because they can make you or they can break you. And it's because we've got so much power concentrated in Washington, as I said before, it creates a giant black hole of corruption. Because of the power in Washington, the money is drawn in. And you're not going to get rid of the corrupting money in politics unless you get rid of that power that they don't have under the Constitution. That's another thing they've stolen. They don't just steal the money. They've stolen the power from us. And we need to reclaim the rightful ownership of that through the 9th and 10th Amendment, through local and state government. We need to take that power out of Washington. That was always a concern when they were debating the Constitution. It's going to concentrate all power in Washington. It's going to consolidate it. We got to make sure that doesn't happen. All right, we'll divide the government in Washington with three co-equal branches, and they'll compete against each other. Well, that hasn't happened anymore. Now we've got a pyramid structure there with the Supreme Court at the top. the judiciary at the top. And we'll divide power between Washington and the states and the people and so forth. No, that didn't happen either. It's all in Washington. And it is a hierarchical system in Washington as well. There's too much power there. Take the power out. None of these campaign finance reform things are going to work. None of the mandates, whether they allow political ads on Twitter or on Facebook, none of that's going to make any difference. None of that. As a matter of fact, the best example of this, most recent one, is Chuckie Schumer and his cash for cronies, his cash for his corrupt friends. I'm going to save the environment worldwide. I'm going to hand out $500 billion to people to buy electric cars because the previous subsidies that they would give you, $7,500 wasn't enough of a cash subsidy. That wasn't enough to get people to buy electric cars. Still only 1% of the people buy electric cars. And you got GM saying, well, you know, I think our path to the future is selling electric cars. Oh, maybe if you can get Chuckie Schumer in there, he can hand you $500 billion. That'll keep you going for a while until you can set up your rent-by-the-ride business. But think about that. Even with massive subsidies, only 1% of the people got it. That's why you have the power in Washington. Because they can block you. They can tax your business out of existence, or they can ban what you want to buy. They can ban the products that you want to buy in the free market. They don't care what you choose. They will choose. These people are anti-choice. They're not pro-choice about anything. They're not pro-choice about how you educate your children, how you medicate your children, whether or not you vaccinate them. They're going to tell you which vaccines to get on which time schedule, how your kid's going to be educated, what car you're going to drive if you're even going to have a car. And they're going to shower their friends with money, $500 billion, to get people to buy electric vehicles. And then they're going to ban and tax to death everything else. That's why there's so much money in Washington. That's why it's there. And so along those lines, we have PayPal deciding that they will ban Sabo, the artist, who does the billboards and so forth. On Monday evening, Sabo said on his Facebook page that he had been kicked off of PayPal. Today, PayPal canceled my account with all my money in it. Yeah. Let's get the money out of politics. Let's defund conservative media. How about that? We'll ban people like Alex Jones and InfoWars. We'll ban Sabo and so forth. He said, I explained to them I live in a city with 60,000 homeless people. They're about to make me and my wife join them. He said, when it comes to transfer of money, trust is paramount. They've lost that trust with me. We're living in Orwellian times. You better not trust them yourself. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Money.
Liberty, it's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Let's follow the money. We have Jack Dorsey at Twitter saying, I'm not going to allow any political ads. You got to earn your reach here. And of course, he's going to make sure that you don't have any reach. And he's going to ban people even purchasing it. It reminds me of what happened back when Obama was pushing Obamacare, and you had ABC News running nightly, you know, they only had about a half hour worth of news, and they would spend about 10 minutes of it talking to Obama about how wonderful the world was going to be once we had Obamacare. And so the Republicans said, wait a minute, we deserve equal time. And ABC News said, shut up, we're not giving you any equal time. And so then the Republicans said, well, we would like to buy ads. And they said, shut up, we're not selling you any ads either. That's exactly what Jack Dorsey is doing on Twitter. He's saying, yeah, we're not going to give you equal time. We're going to ban conservatives. We're going to ban InfoWars. We're going to ban Alex Jones and other people. We're going to cap your reach. And then if you want to buy some ads on my platform, I'm not going to sell that to you. The same thing that ABC did when they were working with Obama to sell Obamacare. And then we got PayPal deplatforming Sabo. Yeah, it's all about the money, isn't it? And while the money is being cut off and the ability to buy ads is being cut off, and again, as I pointed out, you're worried about money in politics, it's because we've got too much power in Washington. They shouldn't have the capability to hand out $500 billion just like that. I want you to buy that kind of car that you don't want to buy even when I get, so I'll give you even more money. And then if you don't take that, I will put taxes on fuel and I will ban cars. How about that? So you better take the subsidy now. And so, but on the other side, they're showering money. As a matter of fact, we now have a new super PAC that is going to fund Biden's campaign. So the problem is that Elizabeth Warren, who took the lead in a few polls for a while, her lead has now disappeared. In the last 10 days, as New American points out, she has lost to Biden, or she has beaten Biden, in only one out of six polls. The other five polls, Biden has won, leaving her an average, according to Real Clear Politics, of nearly 6 percentage points behind Biden. And Sanders is a distant third at 10 points behind Biden. So, you know, unfortunately, they're stuck with Biden at the lead. And so what are they going to do? Well, let's shower him with money. And as New American points out, just when the big Democrat donors are about to write off the 2020 presidential campaign, along comes Biden's pal, Larry Raske, to file paperwork and create a new super PAC. Let's just call it a slush fund, called Unite the Country. And he's brought in a lot of heavy hitters to join him. Joe Biden denounced big money influence in politics, just like Elizabeth Warren, just like Bernie Sanders in the past. And now he's flip-flopped on it. And his campaign spokeswoman said, Donald Trump has decided the general election has already begun. In this time of political crisis, it's not surprising those who are dedicated to defeating President Trump are organizing in every way. So they're worried because President Trump has got more money than they do. They're bankrupt. Nobody supports any of their candidates. So, you know, it's going to be very effective for Jack Dorsey to say, sorry, you're not going to be able to buy ads. Because, as I said, you know, as we all know, he's already controlling the reach of what people say about it. Not just the media, not just the candidates, but also you, the public. You're not allowed to retweet certain topics. They put a ban on that. Biden himself called Raske's move to create a super PAC for him. He called it a grassroots movement. It is anything but, folks. He said, this is an understandable response from Democrats who desperately don't want to see Trump reelected. Well, who is running this grassroots thing? Well, this guy, Raske, Larry Raske, is currently a CEO of a lobbying firm. Oh, yeah, money in politics, money in Washington. Okay, so now we have a grassroots super PAC that's been set up by the CEO of a lobbying firm. And not just that. This guy, Raske, served in Biden's two previous presidential campaigns in 97 and 2008. And in 1988, he served as Biden's press secretary. In 2007, he joined Biden's campaign as its communications director. But, of course, Joe Biden says, this is just a grassroots campaign. I don't even really know who's doing this. My guess is, I could just guess who's doing this, but I think it's probably somebody who likes Democrats and doesn't like President Trump. I have no idea who's doing this. He hardly even remembers. Now, with his mental capabilities, you might think that maybe he really has forgotten who Larry Raske is. That would be really serious. I think he's just lying, however. Joining Raske, as New American points out, are other Democrat operatives. Steve Shale, I think is how you pronounce his name, a political strategist in Florida, hired by the Obama for America campaign in 2008. 2015, his connection to Biden was to draft Biden. That was a super PAC. That was the name of a super PAC that supported getting Joe Biden into the campaign. Then there's Juliana Smoot, who's also joined. She served as deputy manager of Obama's 2012 reelection campaign. She raised more money for that campaign than any other campaign like that in U.S. history. Kind of like all of that hypocrisy about Cambridge Analytica. Remember that? How everybody was upset about that? Well, it turned out that Obama had done exactly the same thing, and he had a campaign manager, a female. I don't know if it was Smoot, or maybe somebody, it could have been her, bragging about how successful they were and hailed as a genius by all the people who freaked out about Cambridge Analytica when it was done by Trump, because, you know, there's a different standard for the two. Now, the other thing that you need to know about Larry Raske is that he is a registered foreign agent. He's not only a lobbyist, but he's a foreign agent. These people who are complaining about money in politics, and you get a lobbyist. And not only that, but a foreign agent. He is a registered foreign agent for the government of Azerbaijan. Now, what is it in Azerbaijan? You know, Azerbaijan. Well, that's kind of, they have a lobbying organization in Washington. What are they getting? And what is the key part of their economy? Well, it turns out that they're into oil and gas. All these people who say we've got to move to a fossil fuel-free future, I don't really think they believe that. When they keep cutting these deals to make millions and billions of dollars for themselves, and when they keep bringing in all these lobbyists for this type of stuff, I think they don't believe it any more than Barack Obama believes that we're going to have global warming and that the sea levels are going to rise when he buys that multi-million dollar mansion that should soon be underwater, according to their predictions, if they were anywhere close to true. Yeah, same thing, same thing. And as Mike Pompeo says that Obama was the one who withheld military aid from Ukraine, they say, that's just a conspiracy theory. No, it's a conspiracy fact. Pompeo defended President Trump's phone call. He said it was actually Obama who denied military aid to the Ukrainian government. He implied that Hunter Biden's dealings influenced the previous administration. And speaking of Obama, we got Obama has been caught at George Soros's son's home, Alex Soros, along with a lot of other top Democrats. What do you think they might be doing there? Do you think that this impeachment is just a dirty tricks campaign for the 2020 election? Of course it is. That's exactly what these people are doing. And this information is a lot of this stuff that's being leaked out. This Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, you know, he's portrayed as a patriot. I was just so upset about this. Out of a sense of duty, I have to correct this record and so forth. This is a guy who, as the New York Times was putting out that narrative, at the bottom of it, they said the Ukrainian officials sought advice from him as to how to deal with Mr. Giuliani. He's giving advice to them. He came from the Ukraine. You know, kind of like Alexandria Chalupa, the DNC official who went over there before the election to conspire with the corrupt Ukrainian government to make sure that Trump wasn't going to get elected. That kind of foreign interference. Welcome back. As I was saying before we went to break, George Soros' son, Alex, was hosting a meeting with top Democrats, Barack Obama, Eric Holder, and others, strategizing about how they could win the election. And, of course, one of those tactics that they have been open about, it isn't any secret. They made no secret about it. Eric Holder and Obama, as they were leaving the White House, turning it over to President Trump, they said that they were going to be focusing on redistricting reform. And, of course, we've had a lot of lawsuits by Democrats throughout various states. And think about this, folks. They can't win on their ideas. Right? These are the people who are promoting Marxism. They call it the Green New Deal, but it's nothing but Marxism and austerity. Nobody likes their policies. They're trying to bribe everybody with free stuff, but they're taking away all of your freedom at the same time, and they're doing it very quickly. And so people understand where that's coming from, and they're not very popular. And so they are playing around with the system. They're trying to mess around with the Electoral College. They're trying to mess around with redistricting. They're trying to mess around with the census. And the strategy of changing the redistricting, which has always been around. It's been around from the very beginning of the Republic. It's called gerrymandering. The bottom line is that in each state, the state legislature decides how they're going to draw the lines, the district lines for Congress. And I've talked about this before, how in North Carolina, once power changed, North Carolina was won by Obama in 2008. Within 2 years, people didn't like what they were seeing. And it went solidly Republican. Every statewide office was won by Republicans, and they won a majority in state legislature for the first time since Reconstruction. And 2010 was also a census year, so they would redraw the district lines. They do it every 10 years after the census. And with the Republicans in charge, they redrew the district lines for the first time to their advantage. Because the only offices that were not won by the Republicans in 2010 were the congressional races. Nothing changed. Why? Because when they set up the districts the way the Democrats set it up and the way the Republicans are doing it as well, they set up these districts to make sure that they put all of the voters for one party into one district. Even if they got to string it out as a little skinny line alongside a highway or something, right? So you get these really strange looking districts. And that's the way it's always been done, except now they can do it with scientific precision. And it is very, very effective. So not a single seat changed for Congress in the 2010 election, but after they redrew the district lines, there was a big change in 2012. And so they challenged that in court. Because when the Democrats were doing the gerrymandering, it was okay. But when Republicans did it, it was a bad thing. And now they've suffered several defeats, including North Carolina, in the court system, in the Supreme Court. And they're still pushing that idea. So they will push anything in order to get this done. And the real thing that we have to be worried about, is the fact that, as the Hill reports today, almost 100 former officials, members of Congress, are urging Senate action on what they call election security. This is not election security. This is about allowing DARPA and the military-industrial complex to, quote-unquote, guard the election and count the votes. I've talked about this before. Microsoft and their election guard. You know, Microsoft has worked with DARPA to set up NewsGuard. They're going to give a check mark to these organizations like the Washington Post and New York Times who never get anything wrong, right? And you got to believe everything that they say. And then there's other organizations like ours that you can't believe anything that we say, according to NewsGuard. Now, these are the people who are going to count the votes. And Microsoft has got a small company that is wholly owned by them, and their sole funding is coming from DARPA, a $10 million grant. And they're setting up Election Guard. And now this is the legislative part of this, as they're pushing this out the way they're presenting this in their PR thing. Foreign interference in American elections is a national security emergency. We got to protect our elections from getting hacked, right? And, of course, I kept using that term hack, and I've been talking about this for the last 3 years. I said they're using the term hacked because they're going to hack the elections. They constantly said, we're not alleging that any vote totals were changed by the Russians, but the Russians hacked our election. Well, how'd they hack our election then? Oh, well, they bought $100,000 worth of ads on Facebook, and that hacked the election. In an election where Hillary Clinton alone spent over $1 billion on ads, not counting everything that's spent on her behalf. But $100,000 on Facebook, that hacked the election. But no vote totals were changed at all. No. You can trust the vote counts. Nothing. They were very explicit about that. And yet they're holding this out as a threat so that DARPA, using private corporations like Microsoft as a beard, can come in and set themselves up to, quote-unquote, protect the election. They will be counting the election. Understand, folks, that as we talk about how the Democrats are pushing socialism from Venezuela on everybody, this is also a Venezuelan system. The very first electronic voting company, Smartmatic, was created in Venezuela by friends of Hugo Chavez. And he made sure that he won all the elections because they counted it. And they have been involved in election fraud in one country after the other, from provinces in Mexico to Brazil to elections in other Central American countries to election fraud in the Philippines and so forth. And, of course, Smartmatic, and now there's other voting companies that are out there. But they've changed their name and so forth. And, you know, they're now going by pseudonyms. But this is the other Venezuelan system that is going to be used to shut things down. Cybersecurity. And they now have an act the Deter Act, they call it. Defending elections from threats by establishing red lines. There we go. And all of this impeachment stuff is really just to lay out an expectation that President Trump's support is weak. Don't believe those rallies where he has tens of thousands of people show up for 2 days and camp outside to get in, and they have another 10,000 people that can't get in the venue, the giant stadium. Don't believe any of that. Don't believe what you see on social media. As a matter of fact, we'll shut down social media. We're going to tell you that people don't like President Trump. Then that way, when we provide you with the vote totals that the deep state that hates President Trump have, you'll believe it, right? Will you? Will you believe that? I certainly won't believe it. I won't believe it any more than I'll believe that this super PAC that has just signed on for Joe Biden is a grassroots effort. No, it's not. No, it's not. I don't believe the fact that they can get away with deplatforming people financially. Take a look at the, they talk about Obama and how he was connected to the Ukrainians. Well, you know, he's also connected to the Saudis. Well, that's one of the criticisms they're throwing at President Trump. Saudis. Well, Saudi National gave thousands of illegal donations to Obama's inaugural committee, says the report. And this is coming from the Associated Press, Matt Margolis. And he says that campaign finance records show that hundreds of thousands of dollars in illegal donations from a Saudi national were filtered through a straw donor. So Sheikh Mohammed al-Rabani tried to send Obama's inaugural committee money that was funneled through a seasoned straw donor whose name is Ahmad Zuberi. He agreed to plead guilty to making illegal campaign contributions to several American political candidates on behalf of foreign nationals. He was a top fundraiser for Obama and Hillary Clinton's presidential campaigns. He's a bundler. And he was doing it illegally, bringing in foreign money. Now they say he switched his campaign, he switched his support to President Trump after the 2016 victory. So he had supported Obama. He supported Hillary against Trump. And then after Trump won, he starts sending money to President Trump. This is why the guy's in trouble now. Because just like Cambridge Analytica or this other stuff, right? When the Democrats do it, it's okay. Now they see this, they expose this guy as a crook because they can come after President Trump for taking this type of money. That's the way they're going to spend this. Just as we see this guy who, like Alexandria Chalupa, this guy who is just so patriotic that he's going to come back and expose President Trump. They have ties to Ukraine, as does Bill Pillar. Folks, our special is going to end very soon at InfoWarsStore.com. 40 to 70% off. Discounts are about to go. We have 50% off Knockout, 50% off Ultra 12, 50% off Bod Ease and Wound Gel, and free shipping, double Patriot points store-wide. Don't delay, it's about to end.